Hello and welcome to the Digital and Social Media Sports Podcast. I'm your host, Neil Horowitz. Hit me up on Twitter, NJ287, also on LinkedIn, where I post more content. The website is dsmsports.net, and this podcast is available on whichever podcast platform is your favorite. Just an awesome show for you guys today. I was so psyched for this conversation. It blew me away. Still has my wheels turning and thinking. My guest on the podcast today is Kevin Richardson. He is the Vice President of Content for Clemson Ventures. Just such incredible stuff they're doing there at Clemson. Kevin has such good insight into, really what it takes to build a modern content operation today, what the opportunities are in terms of, going beyond platforms and how to monetize content, how to create stories that just drive new fans and drive new revenue. Just such good stuff here. So listen up. Here is my conversation with Kevin Richardson of Clemson Ventures. I am back on the podcast with today's guest. I'm so psyched to be speaking with him. I told him offline that ever since we first met, I was like, this guy's smart. This guy's got a lot of cool shit going on. I want to pick his brain. And we're going to learn a lot from today. My guest on the podcast today is Kevin Richardson. He is the Vice President of Content for Clemson Ventures. Welcome to the podcast today, Kevin.
Neil, pumped to be here, man. Likewise, like you said, our last conversation, I think it was, a couple months ago or before the holidays, like we got to connect, and I think that we had a 30-minute chat and it felt like it went by in 5 minutes, because we just were riffing back and forth. So really appreciate being here.
Hell yeah. And I mean, you're continuing a great tradition there for years. I think Clemson has been ahead of the curve when it comes to digital, social, content, monetization, even like taking MMR in-house and all that. And you are continuing that tradition with Clemson Ventures being ahead of the curve and doing things that a lot of other schools can learn from. And but before we get to the meat of our discussion, Kevin, give us an idea of your background. Give us an, tell us about your career path, your stops along the way, what you're doing today, and any tips for folks that want to try to do what you do.
Absolutely. Before I even dive into me, I want to hit on that first point. Like, I'm not where I'm at without the people that came before me, especially at Clemson. There's so many great names. You can name them all. You need a couple fingers, couple hands. Like, there's a ton of just great people that came through here, and I'm not able to do what I can do today without those people that came through. So shout out to all of them, the Clemson family, especially in the content ecosystem. But yeah, originally from Louisiana, a small town called Franklinton, Louisiana, a town of like, I think, 1,800 people, 2,000 people, like a little village. I think it was on the town sign. It was the village of Franklinton, which is an hour above New Orleans. Got out when I went to college. I knew I wanted to go pretty far away, but in states, ended up going to Louisiana Tech. Got my degree in marketing with a concentration in sports. My first interactions in sports outside of high school, where I played a ton, is I was a high school basketball coach while I was in college. That then led me to be a college basketball manager for Louisiana Tech, which was really cool. And I really thought I was going to be the coach of the New York Knicks. I was like, all right, I'm a high school coach. I'm doing this. I'm a manager for basketball, and ultimately obviously didn't work out. But my last quarter at Louisiana Tech, I get a sports internship degree with the marketing department, where all I'm doing is playing music at baseball games. That was literally my first job in sports. In college athletics, is I was playing music at baseball games. I'm playing the Jaws theme song on an 0-2 count. Fast forward, it's such a small school, right? So I get connected with community there. Our AD Tommy McClellan at the time, David Pillen, who becomes my future boss. I'm making connections with their assistant director of marketing and so forth and so on. But that led me to getting hired at Louisiana Tech as assistant director of marketing, where I really got into pretty much everything. Like at a small school like that, you're doing run of shows for soccer to basketball to football. You're running social media. You're squeegeeing the tennis courts. You're in some high level meetings that you can just be at because there's only 10 of you. You're wearing a ton of hats, right? And that's where I learned how to grow a ton really early on. Fast forward, my boss at Louisiana Tech, he then goes to Rice University in Houston. 2 months after he leaves, he calls me and says, "Hey, I'm going to build a content team at Rice. I'd like you to be a part of that. What you did at Louisiana Tech, we can go build it over here." So he hires me. We hire a graphic designer in Trey Jackson. We hire a videographer in Caroline Hall, and we built the first ever Rice creative team under David Pillen. And part of that is like, we're dealing with some Learfield model. We're dealing with, I think it was like 23 programs at the time that have never had a true content plan. We're doing in-venue content, social content, recruiting content, which is really, really neat. Fast forward from that, I'm there during COVID. So I start there in 2018. I'm there through 2021 at Rice University. I get connected with some schools over COVID, and we're just all just checking in on each other and how you doing and what are you guys working on and how you keep fans engaged and things like that. One of those conversations was with the University of Texas and Caden Hyatt and his crew, and that was such a light bulb moment for me because our full team was on there, our creative team, and we've got our problems and we're trying to find solutions. And then you get on a call with a program like Texas, and I see people constantly just popping onto the call. All of a sudden, there's like 14 members on their creative team against our three, and they have problems too. And I'm like, how do you guys have problems? You have 14 people. But everybody has their own problems, and it's just different scale, scope, and whatnot. But that led me to getting hired at Texas. I think maybe 9 months after that initial call with them, just about COVID. And they hired me on as their assistant. What was their second in command under their creative team? So my boss was Caden Hyde, and I got to oversee a lot of the social strategy and really kind of some scale and scope and resources and what that looked like was really, really cool. And then planned to stay there for a little bit, and I get an email from Clemson saying, "Hey, we have an associate AD job open up. We know what you're doing at Texas. Your name has been brought up a few times. Would you be interested?" I said, "Yes, it's Clemson because in the creative space, like you mentioned, a part of the podcast, it's like Clemson has been that place for a while where at least they're testing the boundaries, new things are happening, great people are here." So I said, "You know what? I'll give it a shot. Let's go see what it's about." So I come on campus, fall in love with the place, fall in love with the people, and then end up coming here originally as the associate AD of creative, and now has become VP of content for Clemson Ventures, which is, dude, I'm not here without the people around me and luck and just. It's been a lot. It's been a great journey, a fun journey, a quick journey, and excited to see where else it goes.
And give us an idea of how Clemson Ventures works with Clemson Athletics and what those lines of demarcation are like and what the different objectives are.
Yeah, so Clemson Ventures is set up as the revenue generating arm for Clemson Athletics, right? So we had our in-house MMR, I think it was like 2021. We used to be a JMI, and then we brought it all in-house, built our own sales team, and it initially started with six salespeople and a GM. Back in 2021. Now, and that has now expanded to where I oversee the original content unit. We still have those same salespeople or new people in those roles, but still that same ideology. We have a VP of NIL and their team. We have broadcast technology. We have marketing fan experience, all under and housed under Clemson Ventures with the sole purpose of generating revenue for Clemson Athletics, but also above the cap dollars, third party NIL dollars for our student athletes as we post house and where this thing is going with the $20.5 million cap that's going to keep growing, right? How can we generate above the cap dollars that give us a competitive advantage and do it all in-house and still own everything? How we work with Clemson Athletics is we're still a dotted line to them, right? Like we're still all one team, Team Clemson. My CEO reports as a dotted line to our AD Graham Neff. And we both have board of directors and how it all goes. But we also tag team a ton of stuff. Like the ideas come from everywhere. The quote unquote athletic side still focuses on social and in-venue content currently and a couple, recruit shoots and whatnot. And our team focuses on a lot of IP and franchising and storytelling and, how do we get distribution a little bit more than just our Clemson ecosystem, but into streamers, OTT, OTA, there's a lot of just kind of like alignment, even though they're separate entities. But what we're doing, I think, is pretty special. And that's just kind of a macro overview.
Totally. And we'll get into the micro as well. I want to nitty gritty and all of it. I want to go back and kind of understand how you've kind of seen the space evolve during your career, going from the smaller, less resource schools to the bigger ones with like a Texas, like a Clemson, and in particular like how we've kind of seen marketing and revenue generation become more intertwined. And yes, and college is an interesting space because you have some sports where you want to go from whatever 100 fans to 300 fans, and that's meaningful. And then other sports where it's we want to be able to cover them, but we're not going to be able to drive. There's a max of the revenue that we're going to be able to drive, no matter how much resource we put into it, or at least something of an asymptotic cap in that sense. And so, how have you kind of seen this balance of yes, we want to market our sports. We want to add to the student athlete experience. We want to make sure we're covering all sports, but then at the same time, maximize revenue. Are those mutually exclusive goals at times, or are ultimately is it just one hand feeds the other?
Mutually exclusive, but also one hand feeds the other. It's all an ecosystem and how you operate. I think in the past, talking to content, a ton of content still is, and this part is still true. You try to build fan affinity, And you don't have to be everybody's favorite team, but you do want to aim to be everybody's second favorite team, right? College athletics is so interesting because it's like really the only sport or entity that you're born into, you graduate from. Your kids, like when alumni go and have kids, your kids now have that affinity. That's really hard, to match in the pro space or really anywhere else. Like college is super interesting in that standpoint. So from a content perspective, 4, 5, 6 years ago, and a little bit still today, a lot of it was fan affinity, ticket sales, merchandise, right? Now I believe like content, especially in this space, like it's all about ownable IP and you're building media properties, and to where it's not just like a secondary piece and push for what's already happening, but content's infinite, infinite, right? Like
That's true.
you can, me and Neil, you can have an idea today and I can make it tomorrow. We go pitch it, Friday, to where seats are limited, tickets are limited, some merch is limited based on like
Capped.
quantity. Content is interesting, and I think more and more not just companies, more college athletic entities that are thinking like media companies and building production houses will get further along pretty quickly, because that's just where we're headed in that content space. And still, it is still very, very important to still support, paid ads for tickets, or do a really cool lifestyle photo shoot for some Fanatics merch or CLC merch. But now there's other ways you can kind of do that with NIL and some photo shoots. But content as is being looked at now as ownable IP, and it's super interesting when schools can do it at scale. And I think like from a kind of like a more resource school or a bigger school or one that's really, has dove into content, you got to figure out how to distribution scale, make it bigger. Where smaller schools, I think you really just got to, you almost have to pick and choose social virality, find what works and try to build through that tunnel, and then expand, land and expand is something I like to say. And bigger schools, like you kind of do it at scale. You got to figure it out. It's changed a ton, right? It's changed a ton, but the core still stays the same. Like you still go after your fans, you still support your student athletes. You try to continue to build. Now the funnel is just getting bigger to pull people in. And it's no longer just about like going to a game. It's what you get by going to that game. It's the experience you receive. It's the second screen experience on your phone. It's the OTT Connect, CTV. Like, where else can you find us? And it's not just about going to that game or getting that email anymore. It's so much bigger. And I can't even talk more about like the customization approach to content and what fans can truly receive. And I think that's going to be the biggest buzzword this year and the next year, especially with AI integration, is how can Neil or somebody else receive content and Kevin or somebody else receive different content based on their preferences and based on like what tickets they bought, what merch they bought, what did they show up? What did they click? What are their preferences? What emails are they clicking through? Like, it's so much first party data that can inform a lot of those decisions. It's so much different, man, than it is now than it was 2, 3 years ago. And I can't wait to see what, 20, 27, 2030 look like.
Let's double click on that vision real quick, because it's super interesting to me, and like I love how this is taking me in directions that I never thought I would go, around how like is ultimately are we heading toward a future of like almost modular content where like this, like if we match this and this and this and this to match a fan who has this and this interest and affinities, or are you guys just ultimately is about like building such a deep content library that there is something to fit, not necessarily everyone on a one-to-one basis, but at least on a more personalized cohort basis? Like, how do you think about arriving to that future that you kind of envisioned or laid out there?
I think both. I think you can, if you have a good idea, you can spec app it, right? Like you can just put it out there and see, do people like this, right? And I'm not going to commit to a full year of it, but let's do 2, 3 episodes and see, do people like it, right? And then I can go sell against it. Great. Awesome. To your other point, I think data information that we can now receive for first party allows us to make some informed decisions around content. So if I know 80% of our fans love our gymnastics program, whether they bought a ticket, they bought merch, whatever it is, I now know, okay, there's this affinity to this brand new kind of program over here. Oh, by the way, there's no other program within 100 miles of us. Let's create, and what we did was create a 2-season-long docuseries on our gymnastics team, and that were each episode was 22 minutes. And so we ended up making, it was like 6 hours of total content, original content, through our own team. And then distribution, let me get back to that. It's like, it's not just living on our social and digital and YouTube, right? Like we did deals with Gray Media, so now it's on Fox. We've done deals with ESPN and ACC, so now it's on ACC Network and ESPNU. And we have a ton of like it's going to come out soon where we have some streaming options where we're placing original content that is all in-house made onto streamers to allow other people to see our content and go, oh, whoa, I kind of like what Clemson's doing. And it doesn't necessarily, Neil, have to be about wins and losses. It's all about
Right.
lifestyle off the court and all this other cool stuff. And so to your point about modular versus almost like seeing the data come to life and how you inform yourself on content decisions, we do both. There can be the spec up, but then there's also like you build it out. And then you can build similar to what Hulu, Disney, Apple do. You create an upfront and say, hey, streamers or external partners or even our sales team and our content team, here's what the next year and a half roadmap of content looks like. And here's snackable content, here's features, here's docuseries, here's podcasts. Guess what? Here's where everything's going to go. So here's our impressions and our CPMs and KPIs based on what people need. And then all of a sudden you can build that out and everybody's aligned from externally to internally, what we're building, when it's going out, why it's going out from data-informed decisions. And you just kind of keep building from there. And all of a sudden, you have this big library, like you mentioned, where FAST channels come into play and OTA partners come into play and say, hey, we want that library. Great. We can license it. We can sell against it through commercial. We can pull through with product placement. We can do pre-roll, mid-roll, post-roll. It's super interesting. And then guess what? All of that still feeds your ecosystem that you build at each school through social clips, one-offs, partnering with student athletes to collab. Like there's so much other things you can do. So it's all really, really interesting.
Yeah, I mean it truly, and you're using the terminology. I mean, it truly is like you're at a media company, and you are thinking
Right.
in those terms. You think about like, do we have pilots this season? Do we have upfronts? Like, what's our distribution strategy? And like, it's so fascinating to understand that and understand how things kind of come together in that sense. And like, in that world, like, are you ultimately thinking about like, are you competing against like the other programming on Netflix? So you're not thinking about like, how do we win over sports, their sports content interest, but how do we win over all their discretionary hours? So the old joke was that Netflix used to say they used to compete with sleep. All right, I guess you guys are now are competing with any other non-Clemson content almost, and trying to fill all those niches, as opposed to just, we want to be your sports content, we want to be your everything content.
A good question. I honestly, maybe there's a world in the future where we're competing with Netflix content. I don't see that today. Like that's a big feat. That's a big mountain to climb. But how do I get on, Pluto TV, Fubo TV, Amazon, Roku, like all these other places where guess what? We have 500,000 people that have purchased something that's Clemson licensed through Amazon. So how do I feed them content? Right? I know who's purchased things. So how do I feed them and say, I see you've purchased. Great. Here's a series that you might like based on this purchase. And I think that interconnectivity is really interesting. But to your point, I have this grand idea of like when people see our content in the future, I want them to go, Clemson made that? Oh wow. Like it's so different. It's not just like wins and losses. It's like it's what you see in culture and media today. It's dating shows, cooking shows, lifestyle shows. Like it's these things that's like are popular in our internet culture today and moving forward as we get into this kind of creator economy and what that looks like and influencer and staying in that space. But like what I don't want is people to see our content go, oh, Clemson football, great. Oh, Clemson basketball, great. I want people to non-endemic, right? You don't have to be affiliated with our teams at all, but we're making great content that pulls you in. And that could be like the shows I just mentioned, an MTV crib style show, a cooking show, a lifestyle show. And don't even get me into the non-audio space. Like imagine when you go, I don't know if we can say this or not, but when you go into a bar and you see all these TVs that are just running content that you're not listening to. Dive TV, Rob Dyrdek's Fantasy Factory, and all these things. What if we put content up that you didn't need to hear, but you could see? So think student athletes, MTV crib style, cooking show. I keep going to that, like, and what that means for local CTVs connected OTT OTA. I just think in terms of content, like if we can get out of this space of like your own ecosystem, which is great, keep a driver, but then expand to what actual production companies do and media companies. Man, I think what content can become in college athletics is it. We're not scratching the surface. I truly don't think we are.
And so ultimately then, is the future then Clemson is just like, what is the Clemson through line to all that? Like, is there a world where like, ultimately, the kind of secret, not secret advantage, but the unfair advantage you guys have is you guys know your fan base and you have a lot of data on them. And just like a Netflix or Amazon may have as well, of course, but you and so you're able to give content to fans that you have at least a high belief that it'll succeed because you have that data. Like or ultimately, like as you kind of mentioned before, like we may not even care if this person is a bleed orange Clemson fan, as they can still enjoy our content. And so in that sense,
Right.
like do you may not like what does it mean that Clemson produced that content then? Just it has a certain high level of standard, level of quality to it that people can recognize. Is it the fact that like maybe they have some affinity to Clemson and that's the future? Like what's gonna make someone go, I want to watch this content, and like either they don't know it's made by Clemson, or like in the back of your mind, you have to kind of be like, well, okay, we still are Clemson Ventures, and this content is being produced by a Clemson affiliated or entity. Therefore, we have to have some sort of Clemson through line in it.
As storytelling, like it's still like our 500 student athletes here that we're pulling through into that content. We're just making them bigger stars than just on the field, the court, whatever that is that they're playing. Like we're in the business of building stars in this space, right? So, from a through line perspective, it's still Clemson. It's still like our facilities. We're showcasing Clemson and the growth that we've had here. We're showcasing the upstate Carolina. But we're putting a spin on some of that content, right? Again, we've done docuseries where we've Last Chance U, Drive to Survive, like those style shows. We follow a full team for a year and we don't put it out until the next year, where we can go sell against it and whatnot. But so we've done docuseries, we've done follow the team docs. Guess what? Everybody else does too. And I think that's, you're seeing that all across the, Netflix already has that, right? Other schools already have that on their YouTube. So what can we do a little bit differently that's like, oh, we can do this? Oh, cool. Now still there's still this, so when you talk about fan affinity, we know the Clemson fan will watch things like that. How do we get the non-Clemson fan who doesn't care about wins and losses, who doesn't care about if we won a championship or not, but they care about something else. They care about they have a new kid, they care about like family-friendly television. How can we create something that's built for, children to learn about Clemson stories that's family approved, that can be on our Clemson Plus app that people watch? I don't know, man. There's a ton of just like you have your affinity here, and there's a ton of what if we brought in some other people, again, non-endemic, and brought them in a bigger funnel that then ultimately led them to buying one ticket, one shirt, one mini plan. That, you know what I mean?
And there's something to that too of like of having that building off that affinity. Like you have certain content buckets, so to speak, that people fill in their lives. Like I'm a fan of dating shows, therefore I'm gonna watch a dating show. But oh, there's this dating show that also intersects with one of my other passions. Like oh, there's a dating show that has a Clemson element to it. Or there's I want my kid to be able to learn math and learn to read. Oh, there's a show that teaches them math based on whatever Clemson basketball statistics. Something that kind of intertwines there. So you're kind of filling those niches, filling those needs, but adding in that Clemson element makes it well, if I'm choosing between two very semi-equivalent options, I'm gonna choose the one that is my favorite school, my favorite brand.
Well, let me give two quick shout outs. I think we got some shout outs at the end, but like Arsenal and the US Open. So
Dating
Arsenal
show.
is one of the biggest football clubs in the world, not just from soccer, but just from a brand. They are launching a dating show called, I
The
think, The
Big
Big
Match.
Mac, right? That's an Arsenal in-house produced show that is all about Arsenal fans meeting each other and seeing if it's a good match. Will I watch it? Probably. I'm probably going to watch an episode because I'm curious what that looks like. Will their soccer fans watch it? I don't know. Maybe they have the data that proves that they will. But the fact they're getting off the pitch and doing something that's ownable IP and could be scalable. And then also like the US Open just tried that, right? Like where I forget exactly what it's called, but so forgive me, but I know they did it here. It's like that's what I'm talking about when it's like it's these massive brands that you think is, oh, we can show the soccer match and the highlights and player interviews and podcast and follow the team and all that. And we're going to do these new IP scalable content buckets that we think our fans will like that we can sell against. And then you build so much of it, say, Say they do 10 episodes at 22 minutes a piece, all of a sudden that's 5 hours. You do that over, you say you strike a 3-year deal with a streamer, OTA, or even just a digital distributor. Now it's like you're getting into places you might not have been. You're creating content you never created. You're pulling in fans who have never maybe watched a match, and now they will. So it's just super interesting because we know that stuff works. People
Totally.
watch The Bachelor every single year. They watch Love is Blind. They watch, like, there's so many. So why would we not try to tag on not just that, affinity and that culture, but every other thing that's always worked since the end of time? Look at HGTV, home rebuilds. Look at Food Networks, Shopping with Gordon Ramsay. Like, there's so
Totally.
many things that people just constantly watch, and there's new shows that stays in that lane. So I'm interested, and ultimately interested to see from a college perspective, how does that translate? Maybe it does, maybe it doesn't. Maybe it's, it'll never work. Maybe it will, but what if it does, right? So I'm super curious from that lane.
It's kind of like almost risk mitigation in some senses, where like you think about like Shark Tank, for example. I'm a big Shark Tank fan, and that was a show that was based on a successful version that was in, I think, Japan or China, I think Japan, and it was the Lion's Den or something. And they said, okay, we're gonna make an American version of that. So you can almost like every single day you can have your eyes open and be like, this is a successful show format. What does it look like to do a Clemson version of that? And kind of can riff off of those things, and that's ultimately what we can do.
How do you make this Clemson enough where it's affinity here, but also it could get outside of our bubble? How do we pull people in? Yeah, we're always thinking like that.
You
So
should think.
one of my favorite things is, like, our favorite question to ask when we go into a brainstorm or just, there's an idea out there, is like, imagine a world where dot dot dot, and just fill in the blank. Imagine a world where we created the best reality show in college athletics. What is it? Imagine a world where social media went away. How would we respond? Like, there's
Love
just
that.
these exercises you can do. And man, like, you that one little phrase of a question, you would be surprised how many ideas just get pulled through from
No, I love those kind of phrases that like wouldn't it be cool if, or like what if we blank?
that.
Like those are always great conversation starters and brainstorm starters. And you said something earlier, Kevin, that really got me thinking as well around the non-audio content and thinking about just ways that content is consumed in different platforms, different formats, different contexts as well. And so when you're thinking about producing content, or do you try to think about something as like we're gonna build this monolithic piece of content, piece of IP that we can, this is gonna be a show, is also gonna be short form versions, we're gonna do clips, we're gonna do a podcast version of it, it can be consumed via audio, with audio or without audio. Like, do you think about how you can kind of slice and dice a show or a content, a piece of content every which way, or is that not the right way to think about it? Like, you say this is gonna be produced for this format and this platform, and everything else is going to kind of be gravy. Do you try to go for those kind of five tool player type content pieces, or like ultimately that's not the right way to think about it?
I wouldn't say nothing's the right way to think, right or wrong way to think about anything. I think thinking about it is the right way, just thinking in general. I haven't thought of it that way in terms of, like, how do I hit all of these capabilities that you just mentioned, but I do think of content life cycles. And I think, for example, if we're doing a show, which we've done multiple now, I think we've got 300 hours of original content in the last, year and a half, 2 years. If we're doing a show, I'm not doing a show just to put it on social. Or, like, I'm doing a show, and guess what? ESPN2 is going to get first run. Then it's going to go to ESPNU. Then it's going to go to ACC Network. Then it's going to go to Gray Media and Fox. Then it's going to go to Clemson Plus. Then it's going to go to YouTube. Then it's going to get chopped up for social clips. And all of a sudden, and I'm not saying all at the same time or even a day apart, like, that's seasons of a cycle. That could fill a whole year if you plan it right. And it's non-endemic, and it's also, like, it doesn't matter about wins and losses. You can plan for that out of one piece of content, and guess what? You can sell against it every single time. So what I mean by that is product placement you can pull through, entitlement you can pull through, but pre-roll, mid-roll, post-roll, commercial inventory, sell against it every single time. And allow like, not like a bidding war, but allow somebody to come in and say, no, we want exclusive rights for the first 30 days. We want it for the first 60. Right. And that's how a lot of, production companies work. And then you do that once, and guess what? Now you do it five, six times. All of a sudden, your content is 24/7 somewhere. Somebody's finding it. And then it all comes back into social play. Now, from what you mentioned of, like, non-audio, and that's just, I'll say that that's more docuseries, features, like storytelling, right? Podcasts a little bit different. Like, we're trying to get distribution out like crazy. Kind of the same mythology, but a little bit different. I'm not really, a lot of it is podcasts are a lot of it's very relative to what's going on today. So I'm not trying to, film a podcast today and put it out in 6 months on ACC Network. I'm trying to, week two, you guys got it. But it's a shorter life cycle or same kind of life cycle, but just shorter, maybe quarter one, quarter two, as opposed to,
In a sense,
25, 20.
you could also produce a podcast where it's like interviews with Clemson alumni or whatever, telling stories, and then becomes more evergreen.
100%, you can do that. The non-audio, I'll say that we haven't really, that's a vision of mine, as not a big vision, but just like a piece of the pie, is how do we get, and maybe we don't, it's just thoughts, right? How would we and should we do non-audio content or things that people can consume? And where would they watch it? Why would they watch it? Like those kind of things. It's an interesting thought because you go into any big rest, not big restaurant, but you go to like your local restaurant. Like here we have walk-ons, right? And they got 20 TVs. Some of them are playing old highlights. Some of them are playing, press conferences. Some are just like, again, I go into like Rob Dyrdek's, not Fantasy Factory, but when he does, I forget the name of the show, but his
Ridiculousness or something.
ridiculousness, right? Like you don't need to hear it. You could watch it. MTV Cribs, you don't need to hear it. You can watch it. That stuff is super interesting to me. Not saying we'll do it. We've gone down that road. It's just been thought about here of like if we did it, how would we do it? So I wouldn't say all of it is like we're not trying to hit every single target with every single piece of content we're making, but we are thinking about every single aspect of the content we are making.
And how do you think about too of the sort of built to sell versus bought, built up sold, dichotomy, I guess? Like, did you guys have opportunities where, hey, we're gonna create a cooking show or a food related show, knowing that we're gonna be able to get a food related brand with it in some senses? Or, hey, we are talking to our local grocery store, we're talking to a QSR. How can we create content that's gonna help activate them? Like, how do you think about those approaches?
That's a great debate. You can go back and forth on it. I believe if you feel so convicted that a piece of content or an idea about content is that good, you should make it regardless. You don't have to put a full year of work into it and say this is going to be a 3-hour documentary. If it's, you kind of got to pick and choose. Like you might be doing one episode or get a test out there. Like we talk about pilots. If you believe this content is so good, go test it. Go put it on your YouTube. See if somebody will take it. Chop it up for social. Just kind of see, right? And so like that debate of built if sold is tough because a lot of, consumers or media buyers want to know what the impressions and CPMs are. Oftentimes, not, if you don't have, and I'm, thinking of how we first started, if you don't have that footing to stand on of like, well, this is how many impressions it's got and CPMs is where it can go, and you're just building to build just to see, you're going to be doing a lot of pilots and spec episodes, especially us internally, MMR, like we're trying to, we figure that out. And then when it hits and you say, hey, one episode did this many impressions or, went this many places or it got picked up, own media and earned media, and I got picked up these places. We want to do 4 episodes, so we can assume it will be, this times four, give or take 10%. Would you be interested? And so just build these ideas. But if you fully believe that an idea is good and say there's no bites on it from a built if sold standpoint, I would recommend like not putting all your eggs in one basket in that, but figuring out your work capacity, your team's capacity, and saying, let's just go do one episode. And prove to people this is a great idea. And then see. And then guess what? Quarter two comes, quarter three comes, you start pitching that, you case study it, and you go out and say, look, this is what we did. You're the first people we're talking to, you're the second people we're talking to. And kind of build it from there. That it's such an interesting debate, the built if sold model versus like pilots and spec apps, and
Think what's interesting too,
it's
you can
fascinating.
see the sort of like we have a lot of talk these days about micro dramas and certainly short form. And I
Yeah.
wonder if like you could almost start to think about micro dramas as a way to sort of test in advance almost and be like, hey, we've done a few of these 90-second episodes. Let's build a long form version that can live in our OTT in the future. And it kind of, again, that sort of risk mitigation, knowing that there are eyeballs for this. We know there's demand for more of this. How can we go more in depth and kind of use that as a testing ground to some extent?
I would say everything has to have a business case too. Like you can't make it because you have a gut feeling like this is gonna
Yeah.
like what's the cape what's the business case for
What's
why
the
we're doing it?
insight? What,
Yeah, what's
yeah.
the insight? Why, you have to be able to, especially when you're reporting, say to a CEO or you're publicly traded, like the Atlanta Braves, right? Like they're publicly traded.
Yeah.
And so when they're creating content, it's like, how will this move the needle in terms of shareholder? And so what's the business case for it? And so it's super interesting in that aspect of you can't just do content to do it. And it's really rare, especially what we're doing now with ventures, to make content on a whim. So me and Neil have an idea today. I got to plan that thing out and let's give our sales
Probably.
team a chance to go sell it. Let's get it vetted. Let's create really good content. I don't need it out tomorrow. I think oftentimes, like, there's that battle of like people have to create and get it out ASAP. And a lot of that's reactionary. You kind of have to from a sports perspective and
Right.
athletics and, traditionally. But if you can, really think ahead, not just 1 quarter, but 2 quarters, 3 quarters, a year in advance, and give people the opportunity to either sell against it, create a great distribution strategy, a marketing plan around the content. How will it, fit in your life cycle? Does it fill the bigger needs of what you're trying to do, which is ultimately for us, create a big library that's distributed across multiple streamers and partners. There's a bunch of business cases that can be made, but you got to have some kind of backing to why we're doing it outside of, hey, it's a great idea. Okay, why?
Yeah.
Did somebody else do it? What are the KPIs that we're judging against it? Some
Right.
things will fail. Great. Like luckily here we can fail forward and fail fast and it's okay. And we're going to grow
Yeah.
and innovate. So it's, I, we could talk about this all day. You can go a ton of
Totally.
different places, but it's an interesting conversation.
How do you think about that balance too? I mean, it's something that always comes up when I have folks in the college athletics world on here is it's not a black and white way to measure success. It's not like if we wanted to maximize our views and impressions and reach, then we would just do football content and men's basketball content, women's basketball content, whatever. They have to balance. Like we want to be able to tell stories about what's happening in cross country or tennis or whatever it might be. And so from your guys' perspective, you want to maximize, revenue and those longer term goals as well, and make sure you're maximizing the appeal to, other potential distributors, whether, streamers or broadcast networks. And so how do you think, is it like, hey, we want to try to tell something of a balanced approach to Clemson, and let's make the best version of this content as opposed to what would be the greatest maximal reach overall? Like, how do you think about these sort of like different types of story, that diversity of storytelling among the many sports that Clemson offers and sponsors versus just what's going to get the most eyeballs and make it most appealing to sponsors and partners?
You got to be able to sell the vision. Most partners and sponsors want the big eyeballs that they see. So, obviously, at Clemson, we're very blessed, an incredibly successful football program. So, an example, what I kind of want to get into is it's going to lead into some content that I think will hit your point. When people think of Clemson and national championships and what we've done the last, 10 years, a lot of people assume Clemson football. And what we've done here, we put together a pitch deck for our Clemson men's soccer team because they've won national
Oh,
championships.
I'll think of
They're
that.
primo. And most sellers and sponsors and partners, they think of it to a sense, but a lot of them go to football and basketball and it's big eyeball generating sport. It's like, what if I told you this team over here is disrupting the pro circuit? They're disrupting the college circuit. There's this inflection point of high school players of do they go to college or do they go overseas and go play pro at 15, 16, 17? Like there's this inflection point, and we have a guy in Mike Noonan who's our head coach at men's soccer who's won multiple national titles here at Clemson, and who is highly regarded in these circles and has done interviews with Alexi Lawless and has talked about the World Cup. And guess what? The World Cup's coming here. So how do I take that story of like, yeah, we win national championships, but let me tell you about this story of these national champions here over at men's soccer and what they're
Yeah.
doing and how it's the world's game and how it's a little bit different than most people are used to. So I think, Neil, to your point on, track and rowing and swimming, like there's stories everywhere, man. Now you got to be able to sell that story and that vision to people who typically look at impressions, TV, football, basketball, et cetera, when I can go and say, look, here's what we got going on here. So it's an interesting balance. One thing with ventures, though, too, is like one of our biggest just like business component of what we make is like, will this drive revenue? If it doesn't, how do we get to a yes where it does? And
Yeah.
maybe it's not ready yet, but a lot of it is, how does this generate big needle moving. Like, how does it generate above the cap dollars? How does this generate revenue to the bottom line and P&Ls? And like, that's a big thing now. And so, if there's stories out there, great. But also a way to test this, and what I'll tell everybody, it's like, it doesn't necessarily need to be, say there's a great track athlete, which we have a ton of here. Say there's a great track athlete. That doesn't mean you have to make a 22-minute feature on that track athlete to start. Create, like you talked about, a micro drama. Create a written article. Do people read it? How many clicks did we get on it? Create a podcast episode where they come in and they talk about their journey or something else that might, pick up in the ecosystem. Create a 3-minute vignette about something and then see, right? Do people like that? What's that business, that case study to say, you know what? This needs to be bigger. And guess what? I'm going to take it here, here, and here. So there's a lot of different ways you can just like make decisions. And then I'll go back to the whole, data point of like ticket sales, Fanatics, like, are people purchasing something surrounding that athlete or that program? There's a ton of stuff you can do that's not just, hey, we're going to make a lot of content. Like, you got to have that business case and purpose.
And it goes beyond impressions to things that can be more meaningful to partners. It might be, hey, you're not like you're gonna reach a demo that you want to reach out doing this other way, or these fans have a really high affinity of factors. Therefore, they're gonna be more likely to purchase, based on your sponsorship of this content of the sport, wherever it might be. Or it's gonna skew more heavily female, and that's an audience, a demographic you're trying to reach, and more Latino, wherever it might be. Like, there's different ways to go about than just, what's the impressions number. That's a certain
100%.
level way of looking at it.
100%. Spot on.
I want to touch too, Kevin, on what partners are looking for. But you can speak on this from the corporate partners perspective, or the media partner and distributor as well. Like, are they looking for? Is it ultimately come down to, the basic metrics we always go back to? Like, what's the impressions? What's the Are they looking at frequency? They're looking at depth. Are they looking at likelihood to purchase, or how it affects consideration? Are you able to draw those stories? Like, what are the metrics that tend to move the needle when it comes up in a sales conversation?
Well, the thing is, like, everybody's very different. Some people want click-throughs on their website. Some people want people in store. Some want just nothing but impressions and brand affinity. And like, everybody's different. Like, there's no right answer. I will say, the more I can pitch and get higher impression and distribution, the easier yeses there are. But it is like, it is very, everybody has a different ball game going on. Like, you have to be able to, one thing with us, we can be very nimble in how we move, because I have our sales team across the hall from me that are in-house part of us. So we can have a conversation and say, hey, how this pitch meeting went this way. They like, they want to be really into the community and engage, or they want to drive eyeballs to their app, or they have a raffle coming up, whatever it is. There's a ton of different things, but nobody's the same. But the more I can say, look, as part of our, say, a podcast, right? As part of our, you're not just buying the mic flag on the podcast, you're buying a spot in venue, because we're going to put a segment of the podcast in all of our venues. You're buying it's going to go on OTA, it's going to go on OTT. We're going to put thousands of social clips out, right? So you're getting more value that way. So I will say, like, it's easier to get to a yes when in terms of impressions and CPMs, but every single partner and sponsor wants something different. When we got into really our 52 weeks of content on Gray Media, the biggest thing for us was like proving we could do it. For 52 weeks, we ended up making 36 hours of original content. For 52 weeks, our team did that. And luckily for us, like, we had a 6-month head start. Like, we already knew what we were building, so we were never behind. But we proved we could do it. And then year two, it's like piece of cake. Year three, it's even easier. And now other brands see that and go, okay, they can do it. We trust them. Let's go. So a lot of that is, it's brand new, especially for a college athletics department to do it. Most people are going through Learfield, JMI, Playfly, and they can kind of talk to 10 to 15 schools at a time. Us, it's, we're doing it all ourselves. So a lot of that is proving ground. So it's a little bit different for everybody, in terms of partnership, but also content distribution.
Is the future, like, ultimately we are going to be a strong, media production house that feeds our social channels, feeds up all these platforms, and is making good revenue by selling content to other distributors, like an OTT or a streamer or whatever? Or is it like, is the ultimate vision to build something that is, Clemson Plus, Clemson OTT owned platform is going to have such a deep library that we're going to be able to drive subscribers just like not to the scale, obviously, but just like an Amazon Prime or Hulu or whatever, or a Netflix. Like, are you guys thinking yourselves that we're a content production house that's going to feed other content distributors, or we want to build our own library that we can have something that lives on its own?
Both. Like ultimately, right, we have so everything we build will come back to our library. We own it,
So
right?
you
So
maintain ownership, yeah.
we will maintain ownership, even if it's, quote unquote, loaned out or exclusive rights for a year. It will come back to us, meaning our OTT library will continue to expand because we will continue to dive in on that. Can Clemson Plus live by itself as a massive revenue driver? I don't know, right? Maybe not, maybe so, but. Like it took Netflix 15 years to get there. It's still taking Disney
Right.
years to
Totally,
get there.
totally.
Like, and this is niched down. This is Clemson, right?
Yeah.
This is our OTT platform. Luckily, like one thing with that is we have IPTE, every IPTE member we have has access to Clemson Plus, and it's also accessible to any fan for $5 a month, and all
Yeah.
of a sudden you get access, right? Cool. But if I can, yeah, like we are thinking of like, how do I get this content? And this is why we build 22-minute shows and 48-minute shows. We're not building 10 minutes because 10 minutes goes nowhere outside of YouTube. It
Right.
doesn't go in social, right? I'm trying to get it in streamers on other, on again, fast channels, on other platforms. So everything we're building is multi-episode, 22-minute, 48-minute shows that can go live all these other places and ultimately come back to our library that we can sell again. So we're thinking about both and how it all feeds into each other, not necessarily siloed. And that's probably the best answer I'll have for that question. It's
Yeah.
like we got to think about both.
I like too the idea of like you can kind of think of it almost as like an Amazon Prime where like Prime Video is one part of what you're getting when you are a Prime member. Just like
Exactly.
if you're part of IPTE, you get all these other benefits of being a Clemson member, whatever to use that terminology, and you get access to this Prime, premium video content. So like, and that's something that a sports entity, a sports program like Clemson can offer that maybe a Netflix doesn't offer, where you're just paying for content. You're paying for content and that can make it more of an interesting opportunity there and get them more in the ecosystem.
To that point, to your thing there and what I said earlier, like we are, it's already dotted line. Like we're about to put content on Amazon Prime.
So
That's
cool.
196 million subscribers to
Oh,
Amazon Prime in the
amazing.
US are about to be able to search Clemson. And I'll specifically say right now, Clemson football house call. And they will be able to look up and watch Cade Klubnik's house call and Blake Miller's house call and TJ Parker's house call, by
Wow.
which all these guys are about to get drafted.
Yeah.
In 3 weeks from this pod, and now your favorite team who drafts Cade Klubnik or drafts Avion Terrell can go look up on Amazon and say, oh, I want to watch this. And I already get it because I'm an Amazon Prime member. And we get value back from a revenue standpoint because similar to YouTube, which is a whole different topic in college athletics, which I think we figured out some strategy for, we get paid on how many people watch that content and how many hours they watch. And we're the only school that I know of that will have in-house original content on a platform like that. I think that a couple other people did it with some co-production, but we'll be the only ones to do that. And that's we're signing that line. So we're excited about that. But then to what we were saying earlier, now when you watch it, say you're everybody's a Dallas Cowboys fan, it feels like these days. Say Avion Terrell gets drafted to the Dallas Cowboys. You're a Dallas Cowboys fan. You can now watch Avion Terrell on Amazon. You're now then fed all of our merch and licensed product to which you might have never seen before.
Yeah.
You're in our ecosystem. And I have a dashboard that shows where you watched it, how long you watched it, where you watched from, iPad, TV, cell phone, whatever. So you kind of by way become part of our third-party data. It's
Yeah.
super interesting. Like what we're trying to do is that. And I think that's just the start, truly.
Yeah, and then you start to know like what else do they watch? What other things are they purchasing? And you can license more, use that IP to license more products, and you can sell them products as well, like. It becomes a hell of a flywheel there, which is the ultimate. That's the buzz where everyone wants to go toward, of course.
Flywheel, man. 100%.
A couple quick things we're just sharing about that, Kevin. I the time's just flying by. This is so much fun, so cool. I want to get your perspective on how you think about creators, and that might be student athlete creators. It might be just creators on in general who can do some talented things or make some cool content. Like, is there an opportunity for a Clemson Ventures or a similar entity out there potentially to partner? We're seeing a little bit of that, I think, with Tubi or maybe with Pluto, that are bringing creators to kind of make content with them. Like, do you think of that as a potential avenue to drive more content production?
100%. First off, everyone's a creator.
True.
I've always hated when people say, "Oh, I'm not creative," or I don't know how to." Everyone's a creator. Everyone has an idea. It's
Totally.
just, are you executing on the creative idea? And it doesn't have to be with an FX, six at a really high scale and big budget. It can be on your iPhone and be in your Google Pixel, whatever. Everyone's a creator. Do I see it going into that space, especially in the creator economy? Yes. And what people are doing? Yes. I'm curious how long it has its moment. I don't think it's forever, but I do think like it's get on the train now.
Yes, so something certainly interesting to watch for. And if you guys see someone who has any sort of potential natural affinity to Clemson, or is just creating cool content that you guys want to be able to kind of work with them on or collaborate with them on, because you have the business machine behind it and the distribution machine behind it, it could be an interesting area to watch for sure. And I'll ask one more question before the show was that. And Kevin, this is so great. I kind of want to like go to the nth degree. I was having one of those brainstorms of, wouldn't it be cool if one day if, or what if one day if blank? And that is like, how far can this go of sports entities and college programs or professional teams, even in leagues, like going to that, becoming that content production house? Like, we a lot of what we talked about in terms of content formats has been unscripted, documentary style, or quick hitters, or talk show. Like, is there a world where you guys are producing scripted shows and it's about a fictional team named Clemson or whatever? Like, how far can we take this?
I think to say how far we can take it is unfair. It creates a cap. I don't know is the answer. Like I think this is we could sit in a room and it'd be limitless to an extent. Like we haven't even talked about virtual reality. We haven't
Yeah.
talked about what Meta's doing. We haven't
We
talked
didn't talk
about
about
what
localization and global audience
global
either.
digital layers. Like we haven't talked. There's so much untapped potential. I think if you, it's curious, we do this exercise. If you strip everything away, every single school, what do they have? They have colors, they have a mascot, they have teams, right? Everybody has that. What makes you different when that goes away or if it went away?
Yeah.
How would that be different? If we think about it too, and not too much, but say we're, two, three terrible seasons away from maybe nobody caring. So how do we make sure from what we're creating, people still care? And so, like, I look at, Dick's Sporting Goods store. They just created a production house.
Yeah.
Chick-fil-A created a production house. The Kansas City Chiefs created a production house. The Kansas City Royals have a production house. And that's just the beginning. I'm super curious what this does look like in the future. I think more and more content teams will run as production houses. I think more and more teams will create non-endemic shows, unscripted, scripted, reality, gaming, all of these kind of shows to reach that next level of consumer, which is changing. Everything is changing. Like these 10, 20, in the world of AI, it's like that's who you're trying to reach. If you're satisfied with your fan being a 65-year-old 10-year donor, you're about to run out a little
Yeah.
bit. Like it's just changing how people consume and engage, especially, but sports, dude, and this is why we love sports. Sports, the storytelling, what can happen in sports, it's why we love this
Yeah.
stuff. It's just changing the way it's presented to the world and how we think about when we create for certain people and consumers is just different.
Yeah.
But I'm like you, man. Where can we go? No idea. But I do think you're gonna see more and more production house style content teams really diving into getting out of their circle and ecosystem, and how do I branch into globally, nationally? What does that look like? I think everybody's gonna have a different opinion, and I'm curious, what that looks like. But I'm very, very excited for what it means for creators and leaders and thought, people just thinking and panelists down the road. And I'm super curious how it all happens. And we'll try and do our part, but there's a lot of smart people out there.
Yeah. I mean, the two lasting thoughts that I'll leave us with before we get to the show will stat, and then we'll have our Tiger Beat segment with quick hitting questions is like the stories have always been there. Like working in sports, being in college athletics, you guys for decades before we were born, like there have been rich stories that maybe we were getting told, or maybe they weren't. And so like all we're doing now is just we're able to create and monetize this content that helps pay for it, but it's bringing more stories to the surface. It's activating on that. It's doing that. And so it's just like it's always been there ultimately. And that's kind of how I think about it and what it's all about at the end of the day.
100%. You're spot on.
All right, Kevin, we're going to get to this episode of Shareable Stat, and then we'll have our Tiger Beat segment. So stick around for that coming up right now. Just fantastic stuff with Kevin Richardson, Vice President of Content for Clemson Ventures. Just tremendous insight and information. Just cannot thank him enough. But stick around because we're having some fun with Kevin coming up with our quick hitting question segment and some really good stuff there. You definitely want to stick around for that. But first episode's Shareable Stat. This is what Shareable Stat comes from a recent Pew Research survey. You probably heard lots of data from Pew over the years, and this one I want to hone in on some data they found about teenage users of social media, of teenage users in general, ages 13 to 17, and how it relates to Snapchat. They asked teenage users about what platforms they use to message most frequently, as well as what platforms they use to post and share most frequently, and Snapchat came out on top by a significant margin. Over the second and third place, Instagram and TikTok. So for messaging, it's not even close. 57% use Snapchat for messaging either several times a day at 41%, or about once a day at 16%. So 57% total, either several times a day or once a day, compared to 34% total for Instagram and 24% for TikTok. So messaging, not surprising, a big part of Snapchat. But the part that maybe is a little less not surprising, I guess, is posting or sharing. And in that case, it was 28% total for Snapchat, which is nearly double what it was for Instagram with 16%. So 17% say several times a day they're using Snapchat to post or share themselves, and 12% about once a day. Again, compared to Instagram, which is 16% total, 8% each for several times a day and once a day. So what do you take away from that? First, yes, Snapchat is still a beast when it comes to teenage users in general, and very much so for messaging. If you talk to any teenage social media user or platform user in general, they will talk about they message their friends most often on Snapchat. I hear it myself talking to my nieces all the time. But perhaps posting or sharing, I would not have guessed that it was that much of a lead over Instagram, and nearly one third say that they post several times a day or about once a day on Snapchat for posting or sharing purposes. And I've talked to some other platforms. I talked to a big major global platform the other day, their head of social, and they just recently really jumped onto Snapchat, and I found some early success. So as much as we think about Snapchat being that one that often gets chopped first when you talk about trying to do more with your lean resources, or one that just kind of gets left in the background, or maybe you repost some stuff to Spotlight, which I think is a smart use case that you're posting on TikTok or Reels. Maybe you're reposting to Spotlight as well. But just overall, is to really sit back and think about is what we're doing on Snapchat effective? Is it worthwhile? Is there something more we should be doing on that? Because certainly, teenage U.S. users in the U.S. teenage users are certainly on that platform all the time. And how can you get them to see your brand? Whether it's watching your content, maybe it's working with some creators on Snapchat. Snapchat is continuing to grow their creator outreach and creator programs. And so, are there creators who are already talking about you or have a fandom or affinity toward you that you can activate with them and maybe bring some partners as well? So we've talked over the years about certainly the lenses and other AR effects that Snapchat remains popular for as well. And is that a way to get these teenage users who are using Snapchat to post, share, and message each other to integrate your brand, to showcase their fandom, showcase their affinity toward your brand? Just lots of interesting still things to consider when it comes to Snapchat, as much as we tend to leave it aside in favor of Instagram, TikTok, YouTube, and some of the other more bigger platforms that Snapchat often gets left to be forgotten about. So again, that those shareable stats, like they gave you multiple, 57% use Snapchat either several times a day or about once a day, and the majority say several times a day to message people directly. Again, these are 13 to 17-year-olds in the US, and 28% say they post or share on Snapchat at least once a day, if not several times a day. So that's just our shareable stats. Think about it, talk about it, ponder it, but more importantly, stick around because more good stuff, more good insights and anecdotes coming from Kevin Richardson of Clemson Ventures. Right back in this episode of Shareable Stat, and I'm joined once again by Kevin Richardson. He is the Vice President of Content for Clemson Ventures. Kevin, you crushed it. in the interview portion. Are you now ready for some Tiger Beats?
Let's do it.
I might be dating myself on people, but there was a magazine I think called Tiger Beat. That's where that kind of pun came from back in the like the 90s or something. I think that's the case. I might be before my time even,
I'm gonna have to look it up. I don't know that one, Neil, but I believe you. I'm gonna have to look it up.
yeah. I'm dating myself here. Oh gosh. All right, number one for you, Kevin. Tell me, you talked about working at Louisiana Tech. Tell me your favorite marketing campaign you got to work on at Louisiana Tech. What was something that stuck out your mind that was fun, that was cool?
Favorite marketing campaign at Louisiana Tech. I have to shout out two guys. So when I was there, we had a team of interns, Gavin Kelly, Hayden Watts. In 2017, when I was there, they created our basketball arena, and they created each player, and they recreated our jerseys in NBA 2K17, I think, or 16 at the time, which wasn't like really done 10 years ago. Like they put a lot of time and effort into it, and then we took that and we went on campus where kids could come up and play against their favorite players on 2K in the TAC, the Thomas Assembly Center. Like that, and that brought out, maybe 100 kids or so. But then we had a basketball game the next day where they got to come and root them on. And so if you played the game with them or you came out, you got the first three rows of access in the student section. That was just super cool. That was two kids that had an idea. That was marketing interns, and they said, we can do this. And that was no budget. That was just being creative with something that was kind of hot at the time. And that was awesome. Yeah, I remember that pretty fondly.
Man, like there's so many reminders out there that there could be the smallest school in college athletics. There's so much talent on these campuses, and the only difference between a Louisiana Tech and a Texas or whatever is just the amount of people and the amount of content they can produce. But the quality of the content, the quality of the ideas, are so good across the border, across the country, from my perspective at least.
Yeah.
Number two for you, Kevin, going back to time with the Rice Owls of. One of my favorite team names out there. Tell me the most viral content from your time there.
Those viral content. I got two, if that's okay.
Yeah, for sure.
So, and one is team focused and one is athlete focused. The team one we did, and I stole this from Buffalo. I don't know who was at Buffalo, University of Buffalo. I have no idea who did it at the time, but shout out to them. It was in 2018. I remember looking at it. We did a Twitter lockdown on Rice Athletics. So we told people a week in advance, hey, we're locking Twitter down, but you want to follow us now because we're going to give away some cool stuff, right? And we're Rice, athletics. People watch us a little bit. We won a championship in 03 in baseball, but how do we get people engaging with our platforms at that time? And so we did a 24-hour lockdown where we gave away so much, just sign stuff. We had partners come in and give away, 50% off coupons at their restaurant. And we gained 1,200 followers. And for Rice Athletics, man, to gain 1,200 followers within like a 4-day window, and how much engagement we got on that Twitter lockdown was a ton of fun. So that was interesting. I would
Love
love to
that.
do that. I would love to see somebody else do that. And then the other one was when I got really integrated into Open Doors. So shout out to those guys at Open Doors. We had Open Doors at Rice University, Rice Athletics, and I forget his name was Austin, but I forget his last name. We had a football player. I wish I could remember his name. His name is Austin, and he scored a touchdown, right? And won in a big game. And I immediately clipped that play and sent it to him for Open Doors and came up with a caption. And I said all he had to do was hit post, and he did. And that blew up for him. Like he got, I think it was like 10,000 likes, 400 retweets. And this was a guy who had a Twitter account of like 800. Like this was in 2018, like, and he's playing for the Rice Owls and he's a running back. Austin Walters, he actually a free agent to the 49ers back way back when. But that was super cool. That was one of those athletes buying in to, hey, our content ecosystem isn't just about us, it's about you guys too. I'm gonna feed you certain times at certain moments. Go post it, say yes, like get more affinity from people that follow you for football, but then build it a little bit bigger. So that was super cool. To see that kind of moment go viral for him.
Hell yeah.
Mini mini viral, so to speak. Nothing crazy,
Well,
but that was
for him, for
viral,
sure.
eight years ago.
Yeah. And it's gonna be so gratifying to know that, like, I teed up for him, he did it, and boom,
Yeah.
success. Like, that's just the system
It
works.
was so cool.
That's awesome. Number three, going to kind of your work day now, like, what is the app or the platform that you find yourself spending the most time on?
Claude, a ton of AI. Like we've built some things here at Clemson that's going to help us a ton, just in workflow and capacity. Like it's impressive. Like it's really
Teach
cool.
us and let us like how do you like what are a couple of powerful ways that you've been able to use AI in your job?
Well, example is like we can take every single podcast, for example. I can take every single podcast that we've ever done. We feed it into Claude and this app that we built where it reads every single podcast. We've given it all of our one-offs and say, this is how we build one-offs, to where it's a library where Neil can go in and search. It's like a search bar. He can type in championships or NIL or Dabo Swinney or something. And every single possible clip that could be a one-off that also resembles one-offs we've done in the past pop up. You can clip it, put it on your desktop in 3 seconds.
Wow, that is awesome.
It's nuts, man. And there's some intricate ways we did that, but shout out to our team and really shout out to Trey Keys on our team. He's the one that took, I think, like a week and just kind of built it for us. And we're just getting started. I think there's so much stuff we can do with that. But outside of AI, which we're really into AI and just how it helps us. But I'm on X, Twitter all the time. I
Same.
still call it Twitter. Some people call it X, like whatever, but I'm on that all the time. Just finding certain people and seeing how people think. And it's really, really interesting.
I am definitely team Twitter also. I refuse to call
Yeah.
it. Even if it may not be the same platform that it once was, I still will call it Twitter. And my buddy Alex Coplo has some good tips about how to set up Twitter searches as well to keep track of like sponsor content by certain teams, by certain brands, by certain types of brands. Like it's a great place for research as well of sponsor content executions out there.
He's smart. We
Hell yeah.
talked before. He's smart.
Love that. Number four, going back to your time at UT with the Longhorns. The most memorable day during your time there. It could be related to content, could be related to a game, and non-related sports at all. What is the most memorable day during your time working for Texas?
Again, for this one, I have two. I have when I started at Texas, it was like March 2021. The first event I ever went to was their football spring game. Coming from Louisiana Tech and Rice, and I didn't have any job duties. It was like my first week there. I just walked out onto the field, had my all access badge, and I just watched. And I was like, oh, this is different. Like, this is, oh man, like that was just such a cool. I was like, I can't believe like I made it here. Because as a backstory, as a kid, I was 8 years old. My aunt took me to a UT baseball game. And so like I'd always had this kind of affinity. And so I
Yeah.
said, for me to work there for a little bit and then experience, like I felt like a kid. Like it was such a cool, just like, oh, this is awesome.
That's incredible.
So that part, and then I'm a massive basketball nut. I love hoops. That was my first March Madness, was with UT and Chris Beard. And we won the first game.
Yeah.
And seeing the celebration of the guys and just being a part of that and being in the locker room and like going to March Madness and winning the first game, and that was such a cool experience. And being on the road, and I can't remember where we were, maybe Providence, or we were somewhere, but that was my first March Madness as a fan or as a worker of a athletics
Yeah.
department. So those two moments really stand out to me the most.
Some great memories there for sure. I'm like picturing you like walking on the field at DKR at the stadium, just looking around, being like, "Holy shit, this is."
Wide-eyed,
Yeah, I can
like,
imagine that
oh
for sure.
wow.
Number five, I always like these questions. The Clemson sport, you may have alluded to it already in your interview, perhaps, but the Clemson sport besides football and men's basketball, whose fan engagement really consistently punches above its weight. Like, what's something that either maybe unexpected or maybe not unexpected? Just always like they get a lot of bang for their buck in terms of engagement.
I got to give out a shout out to our gymnastics content and ecosystem. Like what we built the year leading up to that first year, like the fan effect, we've sold out every meet. Everyone comes.
Awesome.
And even digital standpoint, like there's so many engagements on our content. Like the girls on our team are looked up to by the 6, 7, 8, 9 year old girls at our meets. Like it is so cool to see it be like just like full circle. And we were actually, as a department, Clemson Athletics in totality, we were nominated for a hashtag sports award for best women's content, specifically on Clemson gymnastics. And
Wow.
that's from in venue to intro to social to our docuseries to everything in between. And so many people had a hand in that. There's 20, 30 people touching that department that are not the coaching staff, right? And for
Yeah.
us to be able to be say we're nominated, but then also just see like it's been 3 years now and we still sell out every single meet. Like it's unreal the love that program has here. And so it's just really, really cool to see.
Yeah, no, that's a great call. And gymnastic content, like, and when it's well done, it just kicks ass on social. And to be able to turn that also into, in real life experiences and getting fans out to the meets is awesome here. Do you know of like are most Clemson fans like fans of X number of more Clemson sports? Like, do you have a number off the top of your head? Like, the average Clemson fan is a fan of 3.4 like Clemson sports, or is it not that black and white, I guess?
We do have, we don't have it exactly like that, but we do have like, this is their first event, right?
Gotcha.
So with like gymnastics, for example, that like, I can't remember off top. I think it was over 6,000 people. It was like for the first meet, like their first ever Clemson event
Wow,
ever.
that's
And like,
awesome.
so even building off that, like Savannah Bananas came into town, 80,000 people. I think it was like upwards of 60, 65,000 people had never been to Clemson, had never
Wow.
come to a game. And it's like, that stuff's so cool. Like, that stuff's super interesting to me, how we're able to capture that. But I, and maybe I'm misspeaking here, and probably we have an in-house data team as well, and they could probably pull up, you give them an hour, they can pull up, yeah, you know, our average fan is a fan of 3.4 sport, you know, based on data that we have. Like, I'm not sure that answer, but I'm sure we can find it.
No, I mean, I love the idea of being able to get new fans by a sport. Like, you could think of a sport being a quote unquote smaller sport. Like, maybe it's whatever, swimming or track and field or whatever it might be. But if that is an entry point into the Clemson ecosystem, that is a potentially really powerful and lifetime value and all those fun metrics as well. That's a really cool way to think about it. Number six for you. I always like this as well. You've been in leadership positions for a while now. So tell me the most important leadership lesson you've learned during your career so far.
So the most important leadership lesson I've learned, like, and I will hold this true for everybody, is everyone likes to lead and be led differently. If you're not able to communicate to somebody the way they need to be communicated to, you might as well be talking to a brick wall. Like, Neil might be a very like direct, he needs direct communication. This is what we're doing. This is how we do it. Somebody else might need a visual. Somebody else might need the reason why. Like, there's just, and so I have to be able to articulate, or leaders have to be able to articulate your message different ways so people can understand. I think that's incredibly important. And I'll also say this as a principle, like a life principle. There's an interview on the Breakfast Club, which is a podcast. If you guys don't follow, from it's been around forever. Jonah Hill is on this podcast, and this has been documented. I've said it since I was at Louisiana Tech. But he has this cool line in there where it's like, the way you treat somebody who you need something from speaks nothing to your character. It's the way you treat somebody who you need nothing from. And I think about that often, man. Like, it doesn't matter what position you are. It doesn't matter if you're, you know, brand new intern, GA, AD, janitor, you know, whoever. Like, the way you treat somebody speaks volume. That's what everyone remembers, and it speaks volumes for who you are as a person. And I can't, you know, state that enough. Like, have grace, have joy, have humility, and the way you treat people, and respect, and come from a place of love. And it's crazy just like the kind of community you can build around that. But I would say those two things are things that come to mind.
Some fantastic ones to hit on there. I'm thinking about those as well now. Those are sticking with me for sure. Number seven. Tell me, excluding the schools you've worked at, the school whose content or content strategy that you most admire and why? Who's the school out there that you're like, they're doing some cool shit?
I love lately what Oregon's doing. I got on the phone the other day with Ian McFarland. They just announced, or they just launched, their Go Ducks W platform, which is all like female sports amplification. And I think that's the first step of, it doesn't have to be team sport and, you know, just Oregon softball or Oregon women's basketball or Oregon. It's can be bigger than team identity. It's, and that's how you build a little bit more affiliation and affinity for what they're doing at Oregon. I think what they're doing in that space is really, really interesting. I love their content. I think they do a great job. I would say Oregon, for sure.
It's a great shout out. I wasn't aware of that women's vertical platform they have. That's really cool, and what an awesome way to drive a mission as well that can drive affinity that you didn't even know existed. Number
And
eight.
think of a, like a vertical, Neil, like think of sponsorship, right? Like, you can then go sell, like, hey, we all of our women's content right here. And then you create YouTube channels for that. And then you do, like, you're not just purchasing the team or sponsoring the team. Now you're sponsoring like this certain subset of what they have to offer. And you can break that up in a ton of different ways. But I think what they're building there, and talking to them, and shout out Mackenzie Steele, who's a former intern of ours, is running that platform over at Oregon as a GA. But talking to Ian and their vision for that is really, really cool. And I love what they're doing.
That is awesome. And I love the way that you kind of framed it as well, how you can also that it becomes a really compelling proposition to a potential partner who you have partners out there who are like, what we want to support women's sports and we want to find a way to do that. And now you have a way to do that through a verticalized offering like that. Number 8 for you, Kevin, time for our food question. Always got to ask a food question. So we'll make this a two-part because you come from a food-rich state as well, your hometown, your home country, your home state.
Yeah.
So tell me first the best meal to get in Clemson and where to get it. And then the best meal to get in the state of Louisiana and where to get it.
Best meal in Clemson. I'm gonna this is hard. I have to give a shout out because I worked in Texas for a while. Texas barbecue, I think, is elite.
Hell
If you
yeah.
haven't had Texas barbecue, you should go get it. But there's a place here called Smokin' Pig, and it is elite barbecue. Vinegar based, like it's a Carolina thing. It's right down the road. I think it's like 10 minutes from Clemson. I think I don't know their hours off top, but their hours are different. They're only open like 4 hours for 3 days. Like it's nuts,
Right.
but it's so good. So I have to give them a shout out.
Love it.
In Louis, go ahead.
No, I have to say I love it. Sign me up for barbecue anytime.
Yeah, I'll recommend anybody who's coming through, go to Smoking Pig. And then Louisiana, I'm such a shrimp po' boy kind of guy. There's this place called Darrell's in Lake Charles. Shout out to them. Go there. I don't know what else is there at Lake Charles, but I know they got Darrell's po' boys. But if you can truly get into South Louisiana and find you a gumbo spot, I'd recommend anybody try true New Orleans down south gumbo. There's a ton of different spots there. I would recommend at least trying that if you haven't.
Let's stick to your gut food that
Yeah.
Louisiana does so well. That's definitely someone to try there. Number 9 for you. We've touched on this a little bit, I think, even offline. Like, what does the annual calendar look like for you and your team? Like, what are you constantly kind of doing everything all at once? Like, we're ideating, we're selling, we're recapping, we're executing, we're driving renewals. Like, or does it kind of ebb and flow during the year? Are you always planning like a year ahead, 2 years ahead? Are you trying to live day to day? Like, what does the calendar look like for you guys?
All of that, Neil.
Yeah.
All of that. But like for our team, right? We're kind of split up the way we dial out our time. 30%, I would say, is built for original content, IP, like brand new scalable things that we think could do well. That stuff we're going to do pretty much anyway. Podcast features, docuseries. 45 to 50% of our time is custom content for partners. So we'll be in pitch meetings, renewal meetings, ideation brainstorm. An example of that is like Gatorade came to the table and they wanted a cool content series. We went to them with a series called Versus, where it was athlete versus athlete. We'll do
Yeah.
some product integration, so we can do some Gatorade coolers, some towels. We'll do the hydration break during as a segment, and we did 4 episodes of that. But we got to the table through ideation, brainstorm, and execution. Here's how we're going to do it, right? And that took, I think, 6 months, 6 to 8 months
Okay.
from start to finish. Cool, right? So 45, 50% of our time is doing that. We got a ton of other content we're doing for other partners, but a lot of it's custom. Like, we want to build something for you that makes sense for us as well. And how do we marry the two? And then the other 20% is true. I think most schools will do this, is that one-to-one NIL. So Neil has a big game or a big social following, and somebody DM'd him and it's a product and they want them to rep his hat, and cool. Well, we have three studios where we can do that, and for brands and for that kid, where we do 10 photos and one 15-second IG reel. And if you want more than that, we can charge you and invoice you, and we can act as a production company, which is cool.
Yeah.
But in terms of ideation sales, like what our fiscal year is and how it differs from other brands' fiscal years, it's just always ongoing conversations, especially when sales. And one thing you learn is like no conversation's dead and no conversation's at the finish line typically. Like, to get to a deal, this year, that conversation started happening in 2023, 2024. Like,
Wow.
they came to a game or they saw some content or something happened, and now we're figuring out, okay, how do we do this together? So it's always on. We have a revenue strategy team that handles a lot of the kind of like putting pitch decks together and taking some ideas from our content team and taking ideas from event and marketing team. We have a analytics and data team that's driving a lot of that conversation too, that we've talked about. We have our own sales team. We have an activation team. So when the content or when the contract gets finalized, our activation team takes and says, "All right, here's how we're going to activate." And but by that point, everybody's already on the same page. We know what we're doing. We know when it's
Yeah.
due. We're very like aligned. And so when we talk about, and I say that to say, it can be overwhelming to a lot of people when you say you're always on or always ideating or you're different parts of pre-production, production, post-production. But the way we built it out is like everybody's aligned with everything we're doing at all times. So
Yeah.
it's and across departments, which is really, really cool.
That's tremendous insight into how you guys work. And I love the idea that people do have to kind of understand how different parts of the machine work, and that you come in and you have that alignment, you have that mutual understanding across the board. It makes
Yeah.
it a lot more powerful. All right, last one here to get you out on. This might be the hardest question of the whole podcast interview for you, Kevin. Tell me the Clemson content piece that you're proudest of so far, that was produced during your has been produced during your time there.
Oh, dude, you're gonna have to give me a minute. The Clemson
Take
content piece was
your time.
okay. No, I got this one. This one's a little emotional. So we have a lacrosse head coach named Allison Kwolek, who's a phenomenal person, and it's documented. You can find it. Google it, chat it, whatever. It was announced that she had cancer before her like first game, and. Oh my God, man, like that gets you emotional right there. Like you want to lead this team, and then you hear that, and you can't imagine what kind of world she's going through. And I think the cool thing is we went to her and said, "Hey, coach, like we know a ton. Like this is going to get asked of you. Everyone's going to ask how you're doing. There's going to be news articles about you. It's going to get brought up in a lot of broadcasts. I would like to propose that we create our own narrative and our own story with you and do it one time. Let's do it one time and create a great feature on you and what that means for the community and get people to rally around you." And she said yes. And I get chills thinking about it, man. Like she said yes to our team. And it goes back to the people who came before us, like built this, like people were used to content here at Clemson. And so when I got to go to her, there was already, she didn't know me, right? She had these kind of pre-dedicated trust, and I'd been there, I think, for a few months at the time, or maybe under a year. And I went to her and said, "We want to do it right." And so we created a piece about her battle and what that means. And we got some outside voices to come in. Her husband did an interview, some players did an interview. We had other people in the lacrosse community talk, and we got to put that out. And you can currently find that on Clemson Plus and our own social and digital channel. But that to me is better than anything. When you can tell that human story, especially something like that, and do it well and do it right and respectfully, man, that's my favorite piece we've ever put together as a team.
That's phenomenal. A really powerful thing about it as well, and for you to help tell a story that's going to also, affect the community in a powerful and impactful way as well. That's great to hear. What a great memory there. All right, Kevin, you nailed the Tiger Beats. Now it's your chance to take over the podcast and tell us your all-star follow. It can be a social media a follow, Instagram or Twitter. It can be a newsletter, a podcast, a blog, whatever it is. Tell us who they are and why they're following.
Yeah, I'm gonna get personal with this one too. I think a lot of people, they can talk about content. Colin and Samir and a couple other places where they get inspiration. But I want to shout out three specific people who I know I wouldn't be here without, and they might be surprised. So the first one I want to shout out, and I said his name earlier, David Pillen. He gave me a chance at Rice University. He's now out of athletics. He's in the Houston medical field. He's like the VP of outreach and fundraising for Texas Children's in Houston. And I hope I'm saying that right. I know he's down there, but I'm not where I'm at. Don't get started in sports unless he takes a chance on me. There was no reason he needed to take a chance on me at Louisiana Tech and then hire me at Rice, and he did. So I want to shout him out.
Great
The
one.
other person I want to shout out is a guy named John Brewer. He used to be the assistant AD of creative at
Oh,
Oregon. He went to Tracktown USA. He's doing some cool things. But there was a time when I was at Rice and we were going through COVID and just trying to figure everything out. Like him and I, he became my mentor. And we would connect once a month and just kind of talk about life and content and what it looks like. And we can just bounce ideas. And what a great guy. He was on the NACMA board and did some
yeah.
things. And
Way ahead of the curve.
great guy. Like he was just ahead of things. He was just ahead. And then the last guy I want to shout out, his name is Kyle Kavanaugh. He's now the, I think, senior associate executive of external at Louisiana Tech, which is my alma mater. But he was the head coach when I was coaching, when I was in college and we were coaching that high school. He was the head coach of that school. So we had a lot of late nights and a lot of conversations about what I wanted to do in life. And man, like, those three people, and all of us still talk to this day. And again, it's not just inspiration and content. It's like, it's just good people. And I know without a doubt, I'm not where I'm at today without people like that. And that there's like 50 others, right? But those three come to mind of just like, if you're able to have a John, David, or Kyle in your life in any capacity, man, hold on to those people. Those are just great people. So I want to shout them out for sure.
Hell yeah. Three fantastic shouts there. I've been lucky to come across both David and John throughout my years. Not Kyle myself, but just tremendous there. And always great to remember who helped lift you up. And it's great that you're still able to keep in touch with those guys today. That's phenomenal. And how about you, Kevin?
Absolutely.
Where can we find you as well as all things Clemson, Clemson content, Clemson Ventures? Where do you want to direct us?
I want to direct everybody to clemsonplus.com and go look at our content and let me know what you like and don't like first and foremost. I want you to go see that. You can find me on Twitter. It's KRich, ITSKRICH. Shoot me a DM, shoot me a note. Let's get connected. Love people. LinkedIn, same thing. Kevin Richardson, Instagram, Kevin Paul Richardson. Just come find me and
We'll link it
shoot me a
up.
note and let's get connected.
We'll link up all the socials and all the great content at Clemson Plus. Clemson Ventures overall is continuing to produce a ton of phenomenal content and really just setting a new paradigm for how we can think about content from college athletics, from sports, and beyond in general. And Kevin, just cannot thank you for coming on the podcast today, sharing us with your experience, your insight, your wisdom, your knowledge, and giving us some inspiration and energy about where the space is going.
Man, I can't thank you enough for even just letting me talk in this pod for a little bit and just chop it up. So Neil, I think you're like episode I think you've done like 300 episodes. So I need you hype people up. Let me give you your flowers, man. That's not easy to do. I think you've been doing it for a decade. Like it's been quite a bit of time. That's awesome. And more people like you need to get into this space and connect people and uplift and tell stories. So giving you your flowers, it's awesome. I hope you keep going. I can't wait to see what's all in store for you.
Really appreciate that, Kevin. They are continuing to really stay ahead of the curve there at Clemson, and Kevin's a big part of it. And make sure to check out clemsonplus.com, see what they're doing, see the stuff they've done recently with Amazon Prime, and just such good stuff that's really, really being ahead of the curve again, and something that we can follow and learn from. And we thank Kevin a lot for coming on the podcast today and sharing some of his wisdom, insight, and knowledge. But that'll do it for this episode of the Digital and Social Media Sports Podcast. Thanks again for listening, watching, however you consume this podcast. As always, you can find me, your host, Neil Horwitz, on Twitter and JH287, also on LinkedIn, where I post about once a day when I can. The website is dsmsports.net, where you can find every episode and more content. And this podcast is available on whichever podcast platform is your favorite. Until next time, this is Neil Horwitz signing off for the Digital and Social Media Sports Podcast.